I think we're on now, Chris.
All right. I'm Chris Moores, and I'm here with my friend Ronnie Whitaker across the sea, and we're here once again for Cosmic Counterpoint, further explorations into the lands of the unknown, the psyche, and some things that are known, but maybe we're just trying to work with and find our best path forward. So we're just kind of here to banty it about a bit, and maybe take your input and see where the journey leads us. Hey, Ronnie?
Yeah, sounds great, Chris. Yeah, let's go. We had a little discussion before we went on air here, and we thought about the last show that we did, some questions that came to us about the shadow side of our humanness, you know, and things like that. So maybe that's something we can pick up on, Chris, eh?
Yeah, as we were talking, sometimes in this self-exploration process, when we start to find things inside, they don't necessarily feel good. Especially when you're first taking a look at something that perhaps you had been avoiding. Many times I've seen in this process when attention is brought to that, almost always there's an initial reaction against it.
Yeah, well, true. I mean, most of us have grown since our very young years, have grown into this world of, you know, let's say confusion, general confusion, you know, about who and what we are, even as a species, how did we get here, and that
right.
type of bigger picture questions. But we have within us, in this human race, and in each of our emotional psychology, we have this dark side, and how it's come to actually be and originate, I'm not really so sure, but just in modern thinking terms, it seems to be propagated from one generation to the next, and you know, where each generation inflicts, you know, inadvertently and otherwise, inflicts psycho-emotional wounding upon the next one that's growing up. So to bring it into simple terms, you know, dealing with the wounded inner child when we are very young and we experience abandonment issues and these types of things where we're not heard, we're not listened to as a child, we're maybe psycho-emotionally abused in certain circumstances. And these are what creates these wounds in this shadow that we're speaking about, Chrissy.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we have to realize is the benefit of facing into these things far outweighs the temporary inconvenience and pain. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's always there. You just don't look at it. So you have to look in the sense that you want to do something about it, and if you face it down and process that energy, then moving forward ever after, you've got that energy back. It's a matter of admitting that it's there. We all have those issues to be retrieved or resurrected or to have love brought to it, and we can even do that for ourselves. If you see the original incidents, sometimes it's just circumstantial why these things have happened to us. But like you were saying, it's usually something that didn't get a chance to be expressed, something that wanted room that didn't get room, so it got pushed back, and then it hangs back and kind of gets stagnant and bitter and maybe angry, or it kind of takes on a life of its own that then starts sending things to the thought apparatus, like giving you a filter through which you see the world by, and it can be very convincing, but it's also very deceiving.
It's true, and it's quite what you mentioned there about all of the repressed emotions and the things and the parts of ourselves that perhaps we felt ashamed of, or we were told by parents in the society around us that was not good enough. You know, you're not allowed, as a boy, a young boy, you're not allowed to cry. You should be a brave boy, a brave soldier. So you, maybe as a little boy, would repress your tears, and you would repress your sadness, and so that you have a sort of build up of repressed emotional energy within your physiology that creates that great discomfort. But that aspect, and just like you mentioned, Chris, that aspect of our repressed emotional energy within us actually blips out in our consciousness and blips out in our day. So we might be hidden from it, our mind might be cut off from it because we've repressed it personally, but it still shows, you know. And I think that's what you were saying there, Chris, you know, those wounds, the sadness, maybe the anger that we've repressed and these things, they are still there and they're still prevalent and they still come through in our personality and character.
Yeah, it's a key point that sometime when the initial attention is brought to the wound then ascribes that feeling to the one bringing attention to it, when in fact, to reiterate, it's simply revealing what has been going on underneath the surface. Now, in that revelation is the potential to move through it. One of the techniques I've used to work with that is kind of the traditional Buddhist non-doing or Zen mirror, where you try to practice not letting these things grab hold of you and cause you to act. You wait on things and you watch, and you try to not attach meaning to events as they occur. They just rise and fall. You take note of them. You see them. So then if one of these emotions speaks to you and is trying to get at you, if you've got that buffer zone of space, it doesn't grab hold of you and cause you to wreak havoc in your world. Instead, you can wait till it cools down, and then you take a look at it and say, hey, where did that come from? And you can trace it right back to its source of origination. And then when you write literally to that moment, as you were saying, when it occurred, you can go right back to that. In fact, you must go right back to that. And when you bring understanding and, you know, some kind of nurture and being that you have now to loving that, there may well be tears and there may well be pain, but if you follow that through and restore the movement to the energy, then that will transform to celebration and joy and freedom of energy and perhaps even greater awareness that you can build on.
That's true. I mean, that is very true. So it's something that really is very worthwhile for each of us to look at. You know, so if we've lived a lifetime in repressing, unconsciously repressing these traits of ourselves, our shame and things like that, if we've like got a lot of repressed anger within us, we've got a lot of sadness that we've got and grief that we've got deep down, it's definitely worth, you know, actually looking at that, you know, when you become conscious enough and making an actual choice of, hey, I don't want to carry this pain around with me anymore. And just like you said there, Chris, I don't want to attract circumstances where the unconscious pain in me is actually creating havoc in my relationships, is actually, right. Yeah, creating havoc, you know, with the people I'm relating with in my work situation, within the family cluster, you know, and things like that. So, hey, let's make a choice. let's actually look at this, you know, let's snap on those gloves and you know, get down and get dirty and see what's going on in there in our unconscious. Because if we are carrying these wounds, psycho-emotional wounds, it manifests, as you know, Chris, it manifests as a feeling of discomfort within us, a feeling of angst and discomfort and a heaviness that actually further manifests into physical illness because the distortion of our energy system, and it affects our nervous system, our psychology, our muscular system, and ultimately our organs and things like that as well. So actually, it suits us from even a health, a fundamental health point of view, to actually start looking at why we are so quick to anger, why we hold a lot of resentment within ourselves when we're dealing with people, why we harbour, you know, this sort of hatred and prejudice inside our little inner world. It's very worth looking at that and beginning to sort of weed out, you know, the bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you're saying, if you have a certain pain or outlook that is leading, you can create one of the trickiest things to recognize, because you create that situation in your life and then you look at it as if it's on the outside and you say, see, it's exactly like I think it is. And you trick yourself into thinking that it's happening extraneous of your control, and you don't even realize that it's coming from this hidden pain that might be driving things underneath. And as you're saying, as it relates to the modern society, we get so many mixed messages these days. It does create confusion. So we kind of have to go back to square one and think to ourselves, now, did I make the decision to think that, or where did that come from? And build for yourself what you believe to be true based on the resonance in your heart. You know what's true for yourself, and it can come from many different sources, whatever inspires you or ennobles that quality of your heart.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think basically what you're saying there is that level of authenticity and truthfulness within ourselves is can provide a fundamental guide to how we conduct ourselves and how we actually manage our inner space, our inner world and psychology. So we can tell when you were saying there about reactivities, you know, when certain outside external situations trigger our shadow, trigger our angers, trigger our sadness, trigger our shamefulness and things like that. By actually practicing a level of mindfulness through meditation, through these different methods, we can get in touch with our authentic self, and we can look more at how we actually react to things, and we can say, hey, is that really me, you know, or is this just some subconscious impulse that's really driving my behaviors? And I think that's what you're saying there directly, Chris.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. And some of it is learning how the systems we have to process information works. Like, we have a brain, we have eyes that see a slice of the visual, we've got ears that have a spectrum of their own, and same with the other senses, but these are just windows. And all this input comes into our brain, and it's important not to get trapped by the information, not to let the data dictate what we believe, but remain the master of the situation. Keep the mind fluid, know these things, but you don't have to create closed loops. Especially with so much information, pretty much the only solution is to keep the brain facile, to realize it's a processor, just like your computer on the desk is filtering all kinds of different sources of input. Your brain is like a biocomputer, but that's not your essential soul or being that is observing or having this experience. So the more you can get that, get space from that, see the flow of things in and out, differentiate from whence they derive, which could be from many levels, particularly if you're waking into a greater awareness, things on other dimensions, even impulses from all over the place. But as long as you have that space and the clarity of vision, you can always differentiate and come to know what the message was and where it came from.
Yeah, and I think a good way of considering that is the difference between, true feeling and, reactive sensation, where if we go deep into our trueness and into our authenticity, then we are very much coming in touch with feeling, and then feeling. The way I visualize it, feeling is like a step behind where our personality is, So within that feeling, feeling, if you like, from our heart, from the center of our being, and if we think up in this part, it is our awareness, and it's like all the one thing. So it's like a step behind the personality, and where you're able to actually become aware and see the different thought forms and things you're putting out. And you were going in a little step further in there and speaking about, well, in the all-round inner space, if we meditate, if we just close our eyes and we go inwards, in the all-round inner space, which is infinite, we can feel all of these sensations, we can see and perceive these thought forms and these dense emotions and all different kinds of symbols related to our inner space, and these can take on various forms, they can take on various inner panoramas, and very much our dreams are a very, very, very helpful aspect of helping us to actually decipher our inner psychology and help us to actually resolve the shadow, especially when we consider in Carl Jung, in Jungian terms,
Yeah, wow. Yeah, right into a beautiful and deep topic of its own right. I mean, in the last few years, the dream world has spoken more and more intensely to me. And like you were saying, where how you were calling it the realm of feeling, or maybe I sometimes think of it as, my astral body once removed from the physical body, and how that's connected into those dream realms, but where you see that all the time as well. It isn't just when you go to sleep and you dream. You start living in those spaces at once, as much as that space inside yourself can contain, because it can come washing in and totally overwhelm you.
That's right. You're right, bro. It's a perspective, many of us just consider dreams as being the phenomena that we actually experience when we go to bed and we sleep. Oh, yeah, it's just a dream, but just as you alluded to there, bro, it's like when it fundamentally comes down to it, everything that we experience, this whole life is a dream, this whole life, even in our waking state, carries different symbols and symbology, just like your dream symbols and the things that we see in a dream, and these can be equally deciphered as well if we want to find out more about what's going on with our inner physiology. For instance, if you're God, I mean, I spent a lot of time connecting with nature a few years ago, and I used to very much remain very aware of the symbols and the goings on round about me. You know, for instance, if I would see, a bird of prey flying, or an owl in a tree, or some sort of obscure looking aspect of nature, you know, maybe a broken tree has fallen down or something like that. If you actually go to, for instance, one of these online dream interpretation dictionaries and you type in a symbol like broken tree, you know, wind or hooting owl or anything like that, it actually gives you a physiological or psychological context of which that symbol relates meaning into what is going on internally as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You can almost learn to decode everything. I mean, animals are particular sign-bearing elements. Like if an unusual animal were to cross your path, like one time up in the North Woods, I was with my parents and a giant eagle came, swooped down in front of us and went super slowly flapping his gigantic wings, and we all went, whoa, you know, and that's the dream breaking into your physical life. I mean, that's spirit flowing in and invigorating this density. Man, yeah, it's all over when you see it, and when you give it attention, it comes closer to you. So once you start kind of looking for it and learning to understand how this archetypal language works, it starts revealing itself further to you.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. And a good place for anybody to start is basically in the dreams, you know, the dreams that occur at nighttime. And, you know, maybe maintaining a little journal, you know, when you wake up in the morning, writing down, well, what actually occurred in the dream and what symbols, what people, what situations were there. And then, you know, either going on to one of the online dream dictionaries. One that I use is dreammoods.com. And I use that to support my own feelings because I like to try and interpret, you know, my own symbols. And the way I interpret the symbols of my dream is actually by holding it in mind perhaps the next day and recalling aspects of my dream and then just feeling what it feels like inside of me, you know. So, in relating it back to how we deal with the shadow and how we heal our repressed emotions, the very classic dream that we'll get, and this will be prevalent for a lot of people. I know it's prevalent for a lot of people who just get black and white dreams, you know? People get colourful dreams, or a mixture of black and white dreams and colourful dreams, and there's some people that I know that I've spoken to, I only get black and white dreams.
Or they're really? Very, wow, interesting.
Very monochrome, you know, and that is a sign that, you know, there's a lot of internal, you know, shadow and emotion and, you know, negativity is too strong a word. There is like a energetic distortions within the physiology that need to be looked at, you know. Mm-hmm. So it could be fundamental negative type emotions like anger, repressed anger, resentment, you know, and arrogance and these things that we hold within our system that keep us at a very low energetic density, you know, and, you know, that it sort of it blinds our inner sight. It covers our inner sight over. If our emotionally energetic distortions are occurring within our physiology, then, you know, it represses us and it blinds our inner sight, and that's why we get these black and white dreams. I've had loads of black and white dreams, and I still will have loads of them because of my consciousness is actually traveling through different dense, you know, wounded parts of my physiology, you know. So
wow, Intriguing. Yeah, a couple points about recalling the dreams. Like, every detail is important. Because there's talking with people that really work with these things, they assure me, one, the dream is always on your side. Even the bad dreams, they're trying to reveal something to you. Just like we were talking with the emotional wounds earlier, the bad dream is trying to show you something, give you a means to work with something you've been carrying around that you might be able to transform and bring healing to, thereby making your whole world a brighter place. The dreams can be elusive, so you got to get into a practice. And as soon as you have the dream, what I do is I have the journal next to my bed, and as soon as I get conscious enough, I turn over in the dark and just start scribbling wildly. It looks like a disaster. Sometimes I can hardly tell what the heck I was doing, but usually if you go quickly and let it flow and just dump it out, you can recover as much as possible. But like you said too, you can get back into the mood of it. You can recall it. You can almost go back to it and reinvigorate it. And it isn't always a matter of just, I have interpreted this dream X. Sometimes these things can be a theme or speak to you more and more over time, or be a guide in a broader way.
Yeah, that's true. Just when you were speaking there, Chris, I missed your end point. I was actually thinking about some dream examples that I've had lately, you know, and what they might mean in terms of the symbology. I had a dream very recently, and it wasn't a very nice dream at all. I was on a ship in the middle of the ocean, and it was like a major storm going on, right? And my young daughter was there as well. My young daughter Carrie, she was on the ship as well. And the way it was, like what you would see in the movies, the old, you know, just total torrential storm. Mm-hmm. And my daughter, she flipped overboard. She fell into the water overboard. And I was quite aware within the dream as well, so I could really feel the deep fear and sense of loss, you know. From losing my daughter, from my daughter going overboard. And at that point as well, you know, I had to make a choice whether I jumped in or not. And looking at the sea, I knew if I jumped in, am I going to find her? Both of us are going to die, you know? This is like real...
Oh, my word.
Hardcore dreams, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it was... In the dream, a lot of fear, you know, it was bringing up, I could feel a lot of fear.
Incredible, yeah.
In the dream. And I had to face that fear, and I decided in the dream, I'm just going to jump in. So, boom, splash in the water. And I knew that when I jumped in, that I was going to die as well. And, you know, and my daughter was going to die, but I just had to jump in. So I faced that fear. So just like you were talking about, you know, the dreams, the negative aspects of the dreams reflect a positive motivation that we can choose to take. And that positive motivation for me was to face the fear and to jump in that water. And when I did jump in the water, I knew that I would never be able to get her out of the water or save us. So the only thing I could rely on was my inner connection to, you know, to the divine, to the divinity, to that part of myself that's just, you know, which you would call God, which you would call spirit or whatever. And that's the only thing I had within the dream to call upon. And I did, you know, I called upon that. So I intended that. I went, ooh, my God, you know, we need a miracle here. Holy, 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 whatever needs to be done, you know. And it was very strange in the dream as well. A sort of golden light appeared in the whole the dream scene. And Carrie and I, my daughter and I, were lifted out of the water.
Oh, my gosh.
We're put back on the boat.
Ah.
So, So it was very worth their, I would say, in that little scenario of facing those fears and actually trusting in life, trusting in the divine aspect of life, whatever our beliefs might be, you know? So
incredible, so yeah. What a profound dream. I bet that will continue to reverberate. That's because that's so poignant. And just while I want to build off of what you're saying, because it gave me a flow of how that's like an analogy for the spiritual experience, because, you know, the water, the waves are like sometimes emotional turmoil, or even in the greater sense, the turmoil of what's going on in the world today, and you're undoubtedly wanting to protect your daughter on various levels from all this chaos. In the end, you decided to jump in, you made the leap, and many times there's a spiritual threshold, I guess you would say, where you have to have faith in that inner feeling that you're describing and take a leap. You don't necessarily know yet what it's like on the other side of the mind or on the other side of the pain. So we don't go there. We wait. But just as in your dream, you made the leap. Because you had a strong inner connection. You felt the calling. You felt sure enough that if you made the leap and followed that inner feeling, it would somehow help you find your way through.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you alluded to there was making that choice, you know, making that choice to face our fears and making that choice to actually face our dark side, to face our shadow, because so many of us have the shadow and the dark side within us and during our days. So we might be, you know, compulsive warriors, you know, we might have a rotten attitude towards people, we might have certain characteristic, you know, flaws, if you like, that relate to negative attitudes and behaviors. And if somebody was to actually point out to us our negative attitude or behavior, then we could go in into various contortions of denial, you know, of denial in our shadow, making excuses for our behaviors, making excuses for our stinking attitudes, making excuses for our shamefulness and our shyness and littleness and things like that, instead of going, you know, or taking the opportunities to make that choice and go, no, hold on, you know, I have a stinking attitude towards my fellow person, you know, I admit that. And that's definitely the first step to getting over that hurdle of being able to heal ourselves, and is actually admitting to ourselves of how stinking and how sometimes fucking rotten we might be to the core in certain circumstances, you know, how absolutely arrogant we are towards our fellow human being, even internally, silently within our mind, whilst we're putting on a crocodile smile, you know? Definitely a huge, we'll never ever be able to heal our the heaviness and the weight that causes us internal grief if we don't admit our, if you like, our psychological or behavioral, you know, discrepancies, you know?
Yeah, that's the gateway. Well, Ronnie, I think we should, that's a beautiful place to resolve our today's conversation. We have so much more to get into with this dream and psyche dialogue. We could open it up to feedback, you know, if people want to have a dream they want to talk about or have some questions about it, we can banty that about as well, incorporate it into the dialogue we're having. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. If anybody is watching this, you know, if you've got any questions at all to do with any of these topics that we're speaking about, then, you know, respond back to us, drop us an email. You'll see this on YouTube, you'll see this on Facebook. Get in touch. I mean, Chris and I have been, you know, studying various topics of psychology and metaphysics and spirituality and all these mysteries of the world and things like that. And if there's anything at all that any of you out there think of and would like us to elaborate on, or even base our show on, then yeah, definitely, as Chris says, bring it on, and we'll do that, you know, and we'll take you up on that.
Yeah, sounds like a great plan.
All right, bro.
Yeah.
All right, so next week, Sunday, Cosmic Counterpoint.
On we'll go. Yeah, that's it seems like we're just scratching the surface.
Oh, we definitely are, bro. We definitely are. Okay, well, catch you later. See you next week, okay?
Okay.
Cheers, Chris. Bye-bye.
Bye.